Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, cold butt of a gun put into the back of your skull. That's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see as the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarracht I aon of chacht ar a chur, agus suilgam a machan seo, gur féidir é a chur in uig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltí, fís, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhéadach ara I gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gináim go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthchar san I lis dúthail agus gimine fnacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhín ann dár dárach sin, bhín marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and you're very welcome to The Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. Now, Disney is following Netflix in cracking down on password sharing. That means that your kids or your granny or your ex-girlfriend are going to have to pay extra for their access soon. Meanwhile, Elon Musk is scaremongering again over AI, claiming that it will exceed human intelligence next year. And after abandoning its car, Apple's next big thing might be robots. JJ Clark, do you have a Disney Plus account?
I do. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the lads in the house does, so I have access to it.
That's fair. That's okay according to the rules because okay. It's a household account.
Right. So it's when it extends outside the house. Is that the concern?
It's okay for you as a householder in that household to use it outside the house, but it's not okay for you to share your password with your mam who lives in a different house to use that account. Does that make sense?
Right. And that's how it works. It's blanket. It doesn't. So different devices within the house, it's all under one umbrella.
Well, actually, no. I think there is a limit to the amount of devices that you are allowed to concurrently use. There certainly is with Netflix at different levels. I pay the $10.99 monthly for Disney Plus. I don't know how many devices that lets me use. I presume it's not 100 because that would mean that you could get one. You could have a youth hostel or something and there would be one account for that
right.
And everybody could use it. But the point here is that Disney Plus has seen what Netflix did, because what was happening with Netflix is they didn't care who shared their accounts. So you had ex-spouses, you had extended family, you had mates of mates. They were all using the same Netflix account.
Correct.
So they cracked down and it's worked. They've actually gotten more subscribers out of it. And what happened was, if you were one of the people skiving off someone's Netflix account, you were then offered the choice of being an add-on to the original subscriber's account. So for a fiver a month, you would be added on to their account and they would have to pay.
And does the same facility now exist or is going to exist in June or in September for Disney Plus users?
That's what they're saying. They're saying that there will be an add-on fee applicable from June, but then rolled out to all countries, all territories by the end of the year. But they haven't said how much that will be. Probably something around the same amount.
Right. And Bob Iger said this on Monday, so the CEO of Disney Plus. And I suppose he's been in a war of words with Elon Musk. He was a golden child about 5 or 6 years ago. But the interesting thing is this on the back of Disney Plus not doing that well? I've noticed that their branding is kind of like Disney, but not like you've seen it before. So they're trying to move into that adult market. So are they suffering?
I actually don't know. They haven't had a good run, certainly over the last year. Their Marvel franchise has kind of stuttered. They've come out with a few turkeys that have not done well at the box office. But I don't think that's exactly the entire reason they're doing this. I think the reason is because there's money being left on the table there. And they saw that Netflix implemented this and it does actually work. I actually don't have a massive amount of sympathy for people who, you know, 100 people skiving off one account. Because as me paying the full amount, that makes me feel like a mug, you know?
Right.
So I kind of have skin in the game here.
Yeah, and but I think in terms of it's the, you know, public broadcaster kind of thing, or the BBC versus RT, you sort of say, well, put out some really good stuff and like, you know, be a HBO and people will pay for it regardless.
I think that is an absolute bullshit argument. I've never had time for that argument.
How so?
And the reason is because people sometimes know there's nothing on Netflix. It's absolute nonsense. There's loads of brilliant stuff on Netflix.
Well, yeah, I didn't
absolutely
say that.
Absolutely loads. I mean streaming platforms in general. There's way more on streaming platforms than you'll find on the players, for example, of most big broadcasters, including the BBC iPlayer, which has some really great stuff on it. So this notion that somebody hears sometimes people saying, oh, there's nothing on the streaming platform, it's absolute nonsense. It's absolute rubbish.
Well, no, I think it's I think they're tailored towards specific demographics. So Disney obviously is towards a younger audience, and it's sort of edgeless in its, well,
they have their whole other Star TV.
Yeah, and they have Sons of Anarchy, and like,
well,
that's about it.
They've got a lot of reality TV stuff as well. That's not really kids focused.
Right. But yeah, it's, I suppose, the sort of prestige media that you see on Netflix, like the Netflix originals, like some of them are hit and miss. I get it. And it's a huge catalogue, but it's still like really highly produced stuff.
Like Roadhouse on Amazon Prime.
Well, I watched that and that, yeah.
You actually watched it?
I watched all of it, yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
I mean, action sequences, I know you're not into them, but Jesus, it's great for fight choreography.
Okay. Yeah, so, but I mean, I've told this story before, but I've interviewed Reed Hastings twice, the CEO of Netflix, and his point to me, basically, when I asked him about these different movies and categorizations, he said, look, you have to understand that basically we know that there are certain demographics who like certain things, and they might only like 4% of what's on Netflix, but that's hundreds, if not thousands, of titles. And they will keep subscribing if we keep supplying them. So for J.J. Clark, we just need to make another Roadhouse. It doesn't matter how many documentaries or how many, you know, that he or other stuff that he doesn't like. If we make a couple of Roadhouses, he'll probably keep subscribing.
Or if they make another Requiem for a Dream or something artsy like that, you'll
100%.
Watch.
100%. Yeah, well, maybe. I don't want to, like, let's not stereotype ourselves too much.
That's not.
Anyway, that is what is going on with Disney. So expect that from June in some countries. They haven't said which countries yet, rolling out by the end of next year. Meanwhile, Apple's next big thing might be robots. And there's a big, might with a big capital M there. Yeah. Capital M. And this comes courtesy of an article from Mark Gurman and Bloomberg, who's kind of the gold standard of what's going on inside Apple and what to expect next. And he points out that there are two devices that they are working on or researching. And by the way, when Apple works on a product, it doesn't mean it'll come out, as we know from the Apple Car, which it spent years and years working on and has just dumped. But one of them is going to be a tabletop home device that uses robotics to move a display around. In other words, it could just be a HomePod with a display.
Yeah, but to move it around, how does that work? Does it ambulate?
Well, let's say you have a HomePod. Let's say you have a speaker, for example, with a screen. And let's say off the top of my head, it's on a coffee table in the middle of the room. And as soon as it hears you're speaking, the screen moves around to face you.
Okay.
You know, kind of basic, really. The other one, though, mentioned is, and this is where it gets a bit more exciting, a mobile robot that can follow users around their homes.
I love the idea of it. I mean, even just in a sense for the elderly, I think this is fantastic. It's like Husqvarna, the sort of the reducing of mundane tasks. Mm. Like if there was a robot out there that could iron shirts.
Now, so, yeah, and that's where we run into problems, because when you say to somebody, a robot that can follow you around your home, now you're starting to think of things like Tesla's Optimus Bot, this absolute nonsense sort of person dressed up with panels all over them, which Tesla tries to sell as being the future of robotics. But actually what you're probably talking about is something that is a little bit more like a Dyson robot vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, the sort of Roomba style.
So you're not talking about something that walks on two legs. You're not even talking mainly maybe about something like R2-D2, which is 40 years old on wheels following you around. You might be.
But strangely, it makes more sense than Tesla's sort of, you know, bipod.
It does, although the problem with something on wheels, whether it's a Dalek or R2-D2, they can't go upstairs.
Mm.
That's always been the issue. And in fact, they struggle over humps like doorsteps or even thick carpets. So that's a problem with things on wheels. But this could be something very, very interesting. I mean, it could be something. We've seen things like Amazon's Astro, which is a little bit like a kind of a pet robot. It just basically follows you around, has a screen on its head. We're saying that robotics and domestic robots have been around for, I mean, I've been reporting on tech for almost 25 years. And I'd say for a good 20 of those years, we've had these prototype robots. I see them every year in CES. It's always the same thing. It's always basically an iPad glued on to a remote control thing that just follows you around. So I'm assuming Apple is not going to make something like that. But absolutely crucially, and this is Mark Gurman and Bloomberg pointed this out, it's essentially saying that a robot which could do sophisticated, like human-like chores, like the ironing or like washing the dishes, will not be on the table.
Well, pun intended. But like the idea that you have a sort of sophisticated robot and it stands at the sink and it washes the dishes, that's not on the table because you have the dishwasher.
Yes. So
it doesn't fry your eggs for you.
It doesn't do. So there's no domestic robot at the moment that does anything especially useful. You mentioned Husqvarna, the robot lawnmowers. Mm. That and the Dyson robot vacuum cleaners, that's about as sophisticated as they get. There isn't really much that has come out in the last decade that's really done much more than that in terms of the ordinary person's daily domestic grind. The best we've gotten are things like smart speakers and coordinating smart home routines with those smart speakers.
Yeah.
Alarms, for example, ring doorbells, you know, being able to talk remotely to somebody who calls the door. It's kind of basic. It's not really.
But what's the next iteration of that? You know, what are we looking at? What are the permutations that Apple might come out with?
The permutations are something that does something additional to that. So it could help in some way that isn't being done at the moment. And Apple working on these robots is probably not a bad exercise in itself, because we know, for example, from the car project, which has been discontinued, that the so-called neural engine, which Apple keeps talking about in its iPhones, that basically came from research in the car project. And probably some of the stuff in the Vision Pro came from the car project as well. So in just working on robotics and seeing what comes out of it, almost like a skunk works, it might be worth it. But I don't think anybody's expecting, like, we're 2024 now. I'd be very surprised if Apple came out with a proper functioning robot by 2030.
Yeah, so they take their time. And that you mentioned the context of, like, their money spinners. Like, we've discussed this already before, the, you know, AR and VR headsets, I suppose, and their abandonment of the iCar. They're looking
for. Is
that
what it's called, the iCar?
Sorry.
Sounds like iCarly.
But the idea that they're looking for their next big thing to, you know, invest in. Mm. And
well, they're always doing that.
Yeah. And so the automotive, then the domestic, and they're looking for something that has kind of universal appeal. Is there a sense that, you know, they may have missed a trick, or they're getting on late because it's Boston Dynamics, or, you know, you have something, you have like field leaders and they're slightly behind, but their approach is totally different.
Yeah, well, that's Apple's modus operandi. They often are not the first in a field of technology, but what they're known for is coming in and just creating a far more polished, far more accessible, far more easy to use, functional thing. in that field. And this is probably what they've done with the Vision Pro. So it does make sense that they would do the same with robotics. You're right to mention Boston Dynamics. They would be like the absolute industry leaders at the cutting edge. Mm. Japanese are absolutely at the cutting edge as well. We don't really hear or read much about that. But I remember being in Tokyo a few years back and having a look around at some of the stuff they were working on there. And they really are very much ahead in terms of robotics. But even they, and that's a country that almost fetishizes like robot helpers and what they could do and how it can, you know, aid your daily routine. And they haven't really come up with anything particularly good either. So Apple, maybe it's keeping an eye on the medium term. There's no question that whoever comes up with the first really good domestic robot is going to make an absolute fortune. Like, and if it's Apple, even more so, because they'll charge a premium for it. Mm. And let's be honest, if it's any way affordable, most of us will buy one. You know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, just as in, if the applications are anything like films and TVs would lead you to believe, it would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, you know, imagine Bart Simpson, you know, getting the robot to do the homework. It's endless.
Yeah. So speaking of that, our last item today, and also speaking of weird future deadlines, Elon Musk once again is talking about artificial intelligence, and he is claiming that AI that is smarter than any one person on Earth, he says, could exist next year. He's not saying that this is the end of the world, however. Last year he was saying that we were on the cusp of the rise of the Terminators because of artificial intelligence. But he is saying, and I'm quoting here, says, my guess is that we'll have AI that is smarter than any one human, probably around the end of next year. And he talked about the constraints last year being related to computer chips and NVIDIA chips, particularly. This year, it's voltage transformer supplies, and he thinks in a year or two it'll only be electricity supply. But this idea of artificial intelligence being cleverer and more intuitive and more instinctive than humans, I don't really know anyone else who takes that seriously.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose for me, the thing when I read that, I was like, this is, when you say, oh, they're going to be smarter, in particular domains, yes, that makes sense that AI is going to be smarter. Like, I thought that was already a sort of a feature of AI, that it can learn and it can learn at a quantum pace, grand, but it can't think laterally. Like, AI cannot move domains. So for instance, if the power's off in your house and you say, oh, I need to iron my shirt, no electricity, it won't know. But a human might go, oh, I can, you know, heat up, you know, a baking tray on the hob, and then use that, because we can use different, you know, intelligences in different fields. Yeah. Whereas,
yeah, so AI, a good example is chess. So supercomputers for the last 20 years have been able to beat the majority of humans at chess, but not the absolute grandmasters, or only occasionally the grandmasters. And that's one definition of intelligence, just strategy. But I think it's really interesting. We've had ChatGPT now for over a year and other large language models. We have not yet had a hit song or book or play or poem or anything else
that we know
creative
of.
Fields. No, a hit.
But I mean,
As in maybe there's an artist who did use it. But even if they did use it for the words, is it likely, or is it even possible, let's say for a song, that the rest of the artistic process, which is just more important even than the words, the sampling, the production, the mixing, the finishing, the touches, that was done by AI? That was all done. They were all done by humans in studios.
Mm.
So it depends how you measure intelligence. But my idea of intelligence is not that it can outcalculate you. It's that, you know, this thing they talk about, your general intelligence, that it's a combination of, you know, a million different signals and intuitions that makes a human being more unpredictable and more ingenious. Like, could you describe any AI system as being ingenious? You would just say it's very advanced.
Yeah, and that it's learning from knowledge that came out, that is, a composite of thoughts and neural networks in the brain.
Yeah.
So I suppose you sort of get into the notion of a self if you know.
You know, I wonder, and I'm not an expert in this field, so I'm kind of approaching this topic a little carefully, but I wonder, does Elon Musk's idea or definition of intelligence differ to the version that I've just given? And I wonder, does that reflect on the way that Elon Musk's brain works? Like, is it possible that Elon Musk regards intelligence as being more to do with calculations and it's a little bit lopsided more that way?
It's more of a, well, it could be like a volume definition that, you know, the amount or the corpus of, you know, the written language in all, you know, languages that ChatGPT or Grok understand available on the internet might be what he's referring to there, because it's just so vast. And you can ask, you know, ChatGPT about, you know, the components of rubber or the chemical breakdown of Coca-Cola, and it'll give you a solid answer.
Yeah, and that's not intelligence. That's something else. And also, we should be mindful that Elon Musk's predictions are notoriously rubbish. I mean, in 2016, he said that Teslas would drive autonomously from New York to Los Angeles. He also said, even worse, in 2016, he said that his SpaceX rockets would fly to Mars by 2018.
Right.
That was 6 years ago. I mean, there's no chance of a SpaceX rocket flying to Mars anytime soon. Every year he keeps saying, yeah, it's about 18 months away.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a sense in that he, you know, that excites the investors and shareholders and kind of buoys his popularity among a certain cohort.
It could be that. That's a more cynical, though, interpretation, I think. It could be that he just is a bit clueless when it comes to stuff like that. So, well, in 2017, for example, he said, or he predicted, that his Neuralink brain chip company, that the first of those Neuralink products would be on the market in 4 years by 2021. I mean, we know that the first human only received the first implant earlier this year. So he's way, way off. So his predictions tend to be way, way off. So when he now predicts that artificial intelligence might be more, might supersede humans next year, I think maybe it'd be safe to say maybe in 25 years.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's a real fear, because there's knowledge there, and I suppose it's what's called the skin bag bias. So that the idea that, like, you know, humans and technology are different, rather than that they're, you know, a singular entity like you with your mobile phone or a version of a cyborg. But like, you can ask ChatGPT, oh, I'm on the Titanic right now. It's the date that it crashes, 2 hours before you hit the iceberg. And you can say, what do I do? And it will unironically, very panickedly, tell you to get off the boat as soon as you can, because it doesn't know that you're not, you know, it knows the time.
It's so it can be described, I think it's fair to say, as a bit thick. JJ Clark, thank you for participating in this podcast. JJ also produced this episode. Rory Bones was on sound, and I'm Adrian Weckler. You've been listening to The Big Tech Show. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iroch di ien of chacht ar a chorp, agus suiligam a machan seo, gur féidir e a chur in uig ceart len a bhuintir féin.
Sciilti, fis, turmi.
Tá sé dochreitse nach bhéadach ara i gcuirna meán an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gináam goribh orcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tarin goribh an orcháir san i lis dúhal agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducas sin eachar. Nau ni bhin aon dar darach sin.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.